2 Corinthians 11, here Paul gives a whole summary of the terrible things that he suffered, and he does so nervously. He says, you know, I'm speaking as a fool here. I think he does so not because he wants to show off, but because he's so desperate to persuade the Corinthians that he's genuine. I mean, they were implying he was a charlatan, he was totally insincere, just after their money in the name of this Jerusalem Poor Fund, collecting money for the poor believers in Jerusalem. I mean, I would have given up with them ages ago. I would have just said, yeah, okay, guys, well, you're wrong, but if that's what you think about me, you know, God help you, and, you know, see you later. Whereas he keeps on with them. He wants, by all means, to help them to the kingdom, and so he uses absolutely any method. Okay, you think that I'm insincere? Right, let me just try to persuade you that I'm sincere. Look, here's a list of all the things I went through. And at the end of this pretty impressive list, really, he mentions a particular incident that I think was obviously very significant to him. It's from verse 32. In Damascus, the governor under Aretas the king guarded the city of the Damascenes in order to capture me. And the Greek in the Acts record seems to imply that the whole garrison of the city was mobilized to catch Paul. This is how much he had against him. He had the whole garrison in a closed city out to capture him. Verse 33, and only through a window I was let down in a basket by the wall and escaped his hands. Well, I think he sees this as particularly humiliating because, of course, it was David who was let down from a window to salvation from Saul's persecution when Saul tried to kill him. Well, King Saul persecuting David is like how Saul used to be persecuting Jesus and the people of following Jesus. That's why he was in Damascus in the first place. So he's saying that he really came to realize how David felt when he was persecuted by Saul. And through this humiliating situation, he felt that he really was understanding how he had made other people feel. Perhaps Christians likewise had fled in baskets over walls to escape him, Paul, persecuting them. But he seems to have a sense here of inverted values, of how true greatness then is in humility. Now, the Roman soldier who was first up a wall and into a conquered city won a special award, and it was called the Wall Crown. So Paul is saying here that he will boast of being the first down the wall, running from the enemy. And he sees that, therefore, as his great qualification. So it's a conscious inversion of values. What was great in Roman eyes was being the soldier who was first up the wall and into the conquered city, who won the wall crown. But Paul says he will boast of being the one who went down the wall, running away from the enemy. Now, this kind of inversion of values you find very common in the teaching of Jesus. The call to be a true Christian is absolutely counter-cultural. To acquire wealth and very nice living conditions, etc., etc., is seen in this world as the highest form of personal achievement. Whereas for us, to be generous with what you have, to live a modest life, this is the great achievement. To be at peace with God, to bring other people to know Jesus, to know that your sins are forgiven. These are the pinnacles of achievement. And in fact, we have got to humble ourselves under God's mighty hand that we might be exalted in due time. So you could say that the achievement of humility is perhaps the greatest achievement. Now, this is absolutely countercultural. This is a total inversion of the values and standards of achievement which are so praised in this world. And we've got to remember that you can't have a little of both. You can't live by the world's values and by God's values. The whole thing, the two things are absolutely inverse to each other. So he was let down in a basket over the wall. Now, outside the city wall, there would have been stinking garbage and wild dogs wandering around in it. I've lived much of my life in high-rise apartment blocks in Eastern Europe. The problem is, living in high-rise apartment blocks, if you ever actually walk around the building, assuming that you're not hit on the head by some garbage that someone's chucked out the window, it's a horrible little area around there, especially in blocks that are not well managed, that particularly if there's not much garbage collection, if there's folks living there who are alcoholic or doing drugs or whatever, everyone chucks their garbage out of the window. The mass of cigarette butts is just massive, absolutely huge. People chuck nappies out. People chuck used tampons out. The mass of garbage there, I'm talking about a sort of a tower block that doesn't have funds because the people who live in it don't give the money every month or whatever to hire somebody to actually clean the thing up, to actually remove the garbage. Some of these blocks stink. I remember in the economic crisis that we had after the Soviet Union finished, people really didn't have money. Everything got broke down. Water was cut off. Electricity was cut off. Heating was cut off. Situation was really rough. And around the tower blocks, the Soviet era tower blocks, was just awful. The garbage that built up there was just terrible. People were just chucking stuff out of windows. And even if you only chuck your stuff out of the window once a month, there's a great big tower block, everybody did it once a month over a couple of years, the amount of stuff that builds up is awful. And so the smell would have been disgusting, and this would have happened outside the city walls. And this is why in one of the Psalms, David talks about the condemned being outside the city with the wild dogs, in this smelly, awful quagmire of garbage that has built up. And it was the very picture of condemnation. And so he was let down in a basket over the wall, and he landed there in condemnation. He was probably covered in excrement, chased by wild dogs, all on his own, it would seem. He was absolutely humbled. And he's saying that this was actually one of the greatest testaments, as he sees it, to the fact that he's genuine, to his greatness, as it were. So again, you see this total inversion of values. That which is highly esteemed in the eyes of man is abomination in the eyes of God. And likewise, that which is absolutely wonderful in God's eyes, humility, etc., humble faith, self-sacrifice, self-giving, doing so without nobody else noticing, all that is despised in the eyes of the world. Well done, people say to you, if you do well to yourself, as the psalm says. If you build up your wealth and you build up your nice house and you build up whatever, your fleet of nice cars, and you build up your holiday home and you get your kids to university, whatever. Well done, you did the right thing. You are to be commended. But that means nothing to God, absolutely nothing. It's neither here nor there. He's not looking at that. His value system is totally different. And we are, through the Sermon on the Mount and the teaching of Jesus about the gospel of the kingdom, the kind of life we should live now under the dominion of the kingship of God, we're introduced to a totally different set of values. We're blessed are the poor. Blessed are the poor in spirit, blessed are the slandered, blessed are those who hunger and thirst for righteousness. It's those who are on the edge of society, those who haven't quite made it, but who have believed in the kingdom. It is those who shall be great.